Hello, this is Curtis Edwards, Vice President of Investor Relations at Hudson Investing. Are you ready to start building your multifamily portfolio? Kent and I are excited to announce our newest deal in Spartanburg, South Carolina. This 157-unit property offers a unique chance to acquire a B-class value-add property for just $120,000 per door. This is well below replacement costs. De-risking the deal even further is a favorable loan assumption with over 6 years remaining at 3.73% fixed. With 50 economic development projects underway and 70,000 jobs within a 20-minute drive, the South Carolina Upstate region is primed for above-average job, population, and rent growth. Don't miss out on this exclusive deal. Find the link in the description notes to learn how you can invest.
And it's good to be, as you can appreciate, I'm sure, part of the overall renaissance that's going on across the Midwest.
Welcome to Right Around Real Estate, the show about how to passively invest like a pro. On each episode, I interview real estate experts who give their top investing advice, strategies, and tools, and I break down their insights into practical steps to avoid the pitfalls and make better investments. I want to help you passively invest like a pro. This is Ritter on Real Estate, and I'm your host, Kent Ritter. Hello, fellow investors, and welcome to another episode of Ritter on Real Estate, where we teach you how to passively invest like a pro. Today, my guest is Ray Hyman. Ray is a managing partner at Terra Capital, and they've got a really interesting strategy focusing, going against the grain, focusing in areas where others aren't, which I think is generally a smart strategy. They're really focused on finding smaller assets with a ton of value in key Midwestern markets. And so, Ray, I'm excited to have you on today and excited to dig into your unique strategy and talk a little bit about the value that you guys have been able to create. So welcome to the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Kent. And great show, a lot of good content in here. And you might notice as we go through, I've stolen a few tidbits from folks that have been on in the past. So happy to be a part of it.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate you being on, man. So, Midwest is obviously near and dear to my heart. We believe a lot in the Midwest, me being located out here in Indianapolis. And I understand that that's really, core part of your guys' portfolio. But I guess before we get there, I need to start at the top. We need to teach the audience a little bit more about who you are. I'm getting so excited here talking about Indianapolis that I'm skipping my notes. So let's step back, Ray. Tell us a little bit more about who you are and how you got to be where you are today.
Yeah, so Ray Hyman here. I'm a Midwesterner originally. Actually, I'm from Cleveland. Super hardworking parents, both own their own businesses, one of which was actually an architectural and construction firm, which is what got me interested in real estate in the first place and was actually my summer job growing up there in Cleveland. So I started pretty young and all the way down at the bottom, completely unskilled labor, which continues to this day. I shipped off to New York for college at Columbia. That's where I met my absolutely stellar partner here at Terra, Tom Higgins. He is a developer by trade, just an absolute star in renovations. And while we were in school, we actually started working together on real estate in the city in New York. And we started buying smaller properties in a few different neighborhoods in the city. And that's what really opened our eyes to the opportunity in smaller multifamily properties. And, at the time, we would have loved to do much larger deals, but it was just a way to participate in the real estate industry where, check sizes still needed to be small because we were young. But it became clear over time as we did more and more deals that there was a really scalable play in the smaller multifamily space that is, similar to single family home aggregators in a lot of ways. And over time, we sort of started hijacking all the software that had been built out for single family home aggregators. And little bit by little bit, we sort of built together an engine that does something very similar, but in smaller multifam properties. But I also had some pretty serious jobs after school. I worked at JP Morgan in investment banking. I covered US real estate and REITs. I worked for Booz & Co. I sat on their acquisition strategy desk, and I worked for Saberica Capital, which is a Boston-based PE fund focused on healthcare, tech, and real estate. But my partner and I, we kept buying properties, smaller ones in New York the whole time, taking little aspects and tidbits from day jobs, as well as our growing investment business, and kind of put that all together into what Terra Capital is today. So we've launched several funds focused on those smaller multifamily properties, predominantly in the Midwest, although we've done one in New York as well, which was a success, but a tremendous amount of brain damage that I would not like to repeat anytime soon. But that's where we are today. We're continuing to deploy, and it's an exciting space. I think it's starting to gain a little bit of momentum the way that single family home aggregators sort of were maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm excited to dig in a little more. So you grew up in the Midwest, you know, you go to New York, get your education, start buying properties in New York. And talk about what brought you back to the Midwest when you really wanted to launch your core strategy.
Yeah, so part of it is definitely personal. I love the Midwest. That is my home. And it's good to be, as you can appreciate, I'm sure, part of the overall renaissance that's going on across the Midwest. I mean, it's a place that got ravaged in the 80s with blue collar jobs leaving the US and sort of hit rock bottom at some point between there and 2000. But it's a place that's really bounced back in an interesting and highly resilient way. It's been built off of really strong long-term growth industries that maybe aren't as flashy as Silicon Valley jobs, but they're not as risky either. And it's really fundamentally built on healthcare, education. Indianapolis is a good example of a market that's built on a lot of government jobs as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these markets just have interesting things going on in tech growth jobs, in reshoring, and a couple other upside economic opportunities that make it great. And culturally, it's an awesome place as well, even though it's maybe not on the top Thrillist list of places to go. You should check it out because they're actually pretty cool. But the other part of it is really just specifically analytical. I mean, when we had started off in New York, we'd done a lot of work there. That was our backyard. We had a lot of connections, but we saw the opportunity to do a much broader national level version of what we were doing in the city. And we took a step back and said, you know, where do we want to do that? What are the markets that make the most sense for us and why? And so we're looking for things like recession resistant employment bases. We're looking for things like long-term population growth, not just short-term population growth where you peel the layer of the onion back one layer and it's not the right types of jobs going in there. It's riskier jobs that aren't as recession resistant. We're looking for places that have really good affordability metrics so that in general, the environment will stay landlord friendly for the long term. And finally, we're looking for places where there's an opportunity to go in, add a tremendous amount of value in the small multifamily space. There are certain markets that just structurally aren't set up for a ton of success there. Phoenix, Arizona is a good example. There's a lot of newer properties. The average age of properties is much lower. So the value add opportunity in small multifam isn't as strong there. But in the Midwest, especially, there are a lot of these, sometimes late 1800s, but usually early 1900s properties that have been around 100 years with a little bit of work will be around another 100. And so we really picked our spots to go and strike our strategy. And so far, it's been working out very well. I think there are other places in the US where the model works well too. But for now, very happy with our MSAs that we've picked.
Yeah, I mean, makes a ton of sense. I think resonates a lot with me and similarly how we look at markets. I love the reversion back to kind of these long-term averages or looking at longer-term growth, right? Not just focusing on the shiny object of the moment. And that's why I think we overlap in a lot of markets. And to that point, what are some of the key MSAs where you guys are either operating or on your hit list of places you want to be?
Yeah, and similar to you guys, Kent, I mean, we do a lot of value add. We do a lot of renovations. And when you want to do a good job of that, you can't just pop up in a place you've never been and expect it to work out. There's just too much relationship building with the city, contractors, architects, law firms. The list is 50 more different types of vendors and ecosystem participants. You have to have a beachhead. You have to plant a long-term flag. And that's what we're trying to do, right? We want that 20, 30, 40 year long trajectory story that we can sit in and really steep in and be there for the long term. But right now we're in Pittsburgh, PA. We're in Columbus, Ohio, and we're in your turf, Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah.
And we find that those markets, you might not think of them as similar, but from a statistical perspective, they are very similar. And from a overall housing stock and opportunity for multifamily value add, they're also very similar. And they're similar from a competitive point of view as well. You know, a lot of people have really flocked to certain markets, Austin, Tampa Bay, et cetera. And every person that goes down there doesn't stay up here, and it ends up being a competitive advantage.
I completely agree. And I feel like we need to stop talking about it right now because we can't let the word get out. But
yeah, that, delete that. Delete
that was one of the reasons. I mean, strategically, I think for you, this being from Cleveland, same as me being from Indianapolis, it was when I was starting my business, it was, do I go to Dallas and Atlanta, which when I was starting were like the two hottest. And now you have your Phoenixes, your Vegases, you have Orlando's, anywhere in Florida, right? But it was, do you go there and try to compete with everybody else, you know, or do you own your backyard, was how I looked at it. And I thought, for the reason that you said, with the relationships, the localized knowledge is critical. You just can't get that from flying out to a market a couple times a year, right? And so I thought for all those reasons, that was why we would start in the Midwest as well. And so, yeah, just agree with you. It completely resonates. I think all the points you've made are key to our investor thesis. And so we understand the markets that you're in now and why you're in those markets. But I bet to a lot of people, your strategy is still unclear and kind of the why around this, right? I think if you hear a lot of the gurus, all you hear is you got to start 100 units plus. You got to go big. You got to go big fast, right? You're acting completely contrary to the, what I would call like the social media advice, the Instagram advice. So take us down a couple layers in that and talk about the strategy and what it is exactly. What are you doing? Give us an example, maybe in a market. And then, just talk us through the dynamics of that.
Yeah. So we're focused on what we are calling and what the industry is starting to call small multifamily. Some people call it mini multi, but what we're really focused on is that 20 units and below range. And you're totally right about the Instagram and a lot of other, you know, gurus that are saying 100 units plus. And a lot of the reason for that is because of scale. Closing on a 100 unit building and closing on a 10 unit building, there's actually a lot of similarity in that process. Going out, getting debt, if you're syndicating it, which is difficult to do for a 10 unit, which is one of the reasons why we invest through a fund, but that process is similar. And you kind of go down, ticking down the list, and the number of hours that you have to put into a 100 unit and the number of hours you have to put into a 10 unit is not the same, but it's close. And so our focus has really been in, okay, how do we get around that issue of scalability and make our model look more like the single family home aggregator model, where they can close 50, 60, 70 single family homes in a month. And right now we're at about 25 units a month that we close. And we'd like to make that significantly higher over time as we go. But our whole model is set up to make that closing process, the debt process, the contractor setup process and planning all as streamlined and scalable as possible. But the reason why we want to go through all that effort and all that headache is because this, you know, 20 units and below range is what we like to call too big for flippers and too small for developers, or too small for syndicators. And that is an absolutely key part of what we do, because we end up being one of the few people at the buying table for the properties that we're going after, which means that we can get really, really low price per unit at entry. And yes, we're value add, so we add a tremendous amount of value through renovations. But once our renovation is complete, we stabilize to right around a 9% cap rate. And sometimes it's higher depending on the market mix and the unit mix. And for us, that's huge because what we're depending on is really the gap between our stabilized entry cap rate or yield on cost and the cap rate that we exit at. And the nice thing about mini multis is that you're, or small multifams, is that you're going in and buying from relatively unsophisticated sellers. They might have forgotten about the property. They might have inherited it. It might be, you know, have a little bit of vacancy in it. It might have some units that haven't been occupied in 10 years. That happens. And even though it's not in great shape, it's in a super core area. It might be that one property on a really nice street in your town that is underappreciated. Who knows who owns it? Nobody can find them. We can. And we do a lot of off-market transactions in this space as well, similar to single-family home aggregators. And we end up entering, you know, below $100,000 per unit, sometimes well below $100,000 per unit. And that is the, you know, first key to success for us. We need to renovate well. We need to manage well. We have a whole system behind how we do those things. But on the exit, we can take advantage of something that single family home aggregators have taken advantage of for over 15 years now, is that while they're buying from unsophisticated folks and getting really attractive entry prices, they can sell as a portfolio. And when we sell as a portfolio, we get a ton of portfolio arbitrage or portfolio premium or whatever you want to call it, simply because we are, quote, institutionalizing this asset class. And by that, I mean, we're taking a 10-unit building that the KKRs, Blackstones, larger investment firms of the world would never look at. And we're aggregating it into a portfolio that has 500-600 units in it. And that 500-600 unit portfolio is an institutional asset. KKR, Blackstone, all those firms do look at that sort of an asset. And so we can sell for extremely high prices per unit because all of those institutional investors are hungry for this asset class. They are starving for anything that has a reasonably financeable cap rate, which exits of small multifamily properties do. And that level of competition drives up price per unit. So it's our way of, similar to single family home aggregators, buying for low price per unit and selling for the highest price per unit that the market will bear. So that is, you know, a little bit of a mouthful, but at the end of the day, that's really the trapped, locked value in small multifam that we're working to uncover, dig up, and bring to institutional level for our investors.
Absolutely. No, and I love hearing that strategy. I think there's a ton of truth there. I think we've seen that. I've seen that in my own world in buying the 29 units, the 42 units, right? And even at that level, seeing the ability to buy from an unsophisticated investor or somebody who just doesn't have their eye on the ball, create a ton of value, and then turn around very quickly and, you know, market it better, run it better, create a significant premium. And so absolutely with the smaller stuff, and I love the idea of bringing it together with this portfolio premium, which I think is a reality. If you can stabilize at a 9 cap and sell at even a 6 cap, you're creating tremendous value in that portfolio. So it's very interesting, very interesting. Now I would venture the reason that everybody's not doing this is because, like you said, that's hard. It's harder to do that than it is to buy 100 units and then and fix it up and sell 100 units, right? So take us through how you've scaled successfully to be able to effectively manage these, I guess, find and then effectively manage these properties during that hold period to create that value.
Yeah, it's really a difficult and complicated Rubik's Cube type problem to get right, because there's so many steps in the process between identifying a piece of real estate and actually successfully leasing it up and even selling it at the end of the day. And each part of that process for us needs to become scalable, needs to become as automated as possible. Mm-hmm. But you know, I can take you through the overall, you know, sort of left to right on how we do that, some of which I'll go over quickly, because a lot of it is what single family home aggregators have done for a long time. But we do a ton of off-market acquisitions. So I have a little bit of a data background, enough just to be dangerous. And so with that, we've built a pretty sophisticated process to identify all the properties that are in our buy box, which are the five or six most popular neighborhoods in a market, the really most core areas, and anything sub 20 units, and prioritize it by how long the property's been owned, age of owner, things like that, that will make it, you know, more likely that we'll be able to close early on with early on leads. And we take that through to really every type of cold outreach you can imagine: calling, mailing, emailing. We scrub Craigslist, which is shockingly successful method. We do Facebook Marketplace, where a lot of folks prefer to list instead of going with a broker.
Yeah.
And the real bottleneck for our process is once we've got, there's really two bottlenecks, but the first one is once we've got all those leads in, how do we underwrite that, turn that into something that is a good price for us that makes sense? We've underwritten it with the correct construction budget, et cetera, et cetera. And for that, we're still very HR human focused. We've got a team of acquisitions analysts. That's all they're trained on doing, is taking those inbound cold leads, turning them into warm leads, developing a rapport, underwriting the property, budgeting for renovations, and taking it through our investment committee process, which includes some of the folks from our investment, stable of LPs, if you will, that are larger LPs will sit on that investment committee. Mm-hmm. And we'll make decisions on bulk portfolios at a time, and we'll move forward. And the second bottleneck, and so that first part is really a training and retaining issue. And we've done a really good job with some awesome folks here that are just fantastic, and they keep the whole system going. But the second part is really on closing. So we've set up, instead of doing a debt process every single time, like you might with an individual asset, we've set up line of credits with lender partners across all of our markets. So yes, they have to go do an appraisal, but they can close in a 2-week timeframe. They are working with us constantly. We don't have to go through an approval process anytime. And at the end of the day, they're obligated to provide us with the entry construction or bridge loan that we will use to renovate the property. And we use a sequence of fully remote closing title companies. So we can do 100% remote signings, a closing, which we have one today, actually, in about an hour, that will take maybe 5 or 10 minutes tops. And all of the documents are pre-reviewed, et cetera. And so a lot of the hassle, a lot of the headache that's associated with acquiring lots of different properties is taken out by that process. It's not zeroed out, and we can make it more scalable over time, but it's significantly reduced. And then we use very similar processes on the construction side of things, which is where my partner Tom is really specialized. And we have a whole stable of contractors in each of our markets that we're constantly managing their schedules and which units they're going to be working on. And we use a series of construction CRMs to keep everybody in line and standard contracts, so on and so forth. And it looks a lot like a single fam home aggregator that does value add. And that is really the nuts and bolts of our process. There's a lot of software involved. There's a lot of automation involved. And where we need to have humans involved, we've got some of the best in the game, I think. So that's really how we've gotten around it. We can do 25 units a month right now very comfortably. I think we're set up to do as much as 70, 75 right now. But the goal is to be much higher than that and be up into the hundreds over the next 3 years. So that's hopefully where we're headed.
I gotcha. And how are you managing the properties? How do you manage all these different properties in these different cities?
Yeah, we self-manage everything. We think that's key. It is, for us, cash flow is so important to our investors. We do quarterly distributions, and it's important for that reason. But also at exit, when we're getting judged by more sophisticated buyers, we're going to be judged by our cash flow performance over the whole period of our fund. So we are hyper-focused on it. We are very tech-enabled. we actually started off in the cloud. So we started off with Buildium as kind of our hub software for property management. And we've just tacked on, I mean, at this point, there's over 20 different property management software add-ons that we've used to make our system more scalable. There's a great example of one that actually is a DIY plugin for maintenance requests that tenants have. And so they go in and their first hurdle through a maintenance request is actually, once they've described it and sent a picture in, there's a remote group that sends them the YouTube video on how to fix the microwave or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And you would think it'd be something that tenants would hate. They love it. It gets the solution much faster and it saves us a maintenance task that we have to go and approve and send somebody out for. And so there's just a every step of the tenant management process has some form of software like that. Security deposits, move in, move out. We use a system where you take pictures at entry and take pictures at exit. And that is how the security deposit is handled, all with a third-party escrow. And it allows it to be very low touch from our end. But we still have a property manager that oversees all of this. We don't like our property managers to get over 300 units. And so they still have a good amount of oversight on what's going on. And it is a, you know, very scalable version of it, where maybe the most important takeaway from all the software is that tenants really like it and it's increased our retention rate a lot. So that's our management style. And it's been going well so far and continuing to become more scalable as we go.
Yeah, very cool. I love the tech-enabled nature of it. I love to hear how you guys are, you know, disrupting the old model by leveraging technology. Now it's actually a benefit to the residents. So really cool with what you guys have going on. I'm sure as you continue to scale and grow and acquire, you guys have some big exits in your future as you build up to 500, 600 units. So very cool to hear. Well, Ray, before we let you go, I want to take you through our keys to success round. We got four questions I want to ask you. The first one is, so put your investor hat on. You're one of your LP investors and, you know, you could only ask one question before sending your check-in for that investment. What is that one question you would ask?
Yeah, and recently, just to get people out of my inbox, it's been, I don't invest in crypto, but the more real answer is, you know, and I have invested in a couple of one-offs here and there is, you know, why are you doing this? What is your motivation and passion and vision for whatever your investment is? I want to understand that before I really get behind somebody. I think you can know a project, you can know a person, but understanding the motivation is really the most important thing. And also, I'm going to go and do a lot of due diligence on this before I invest. I want to get some scale out of that due diligence. So I want somebody that's passionate enough that they're going to be there for the long term so that I can invest in their next version of this, so on and so forth. So that's the key for me to understand, really.
Really good answer. What are you most proud of in your career?
I think the thing that I am most proud of is just the team that we've assembled at Terra. I mean, these guys are great. It's tough to pick and train and keep folks that are really talented. And it costs, but it is worth it. And I wouldn't trade these folks for anything. I'm just proud of the amount of investment we've put into them and just the amount of success that they've been able to have with that investment. It's been very rewarding.
That's awesome. I think seeing people grow and develop, you know, within your own organization, I think is one of the most rewarding things. And so, yeah, very cool. I completely understand the this idea that as you see these people grow and develop and allows you to create new processes, new things, and continue to grow your business.
And you inculcate them with your philosophy too, right? So yeah, they start to come up with ideas you hadn't come up with before. And you're like, man, I've created a monster here, but it's a good monster and it grows the business. So,
well, I'm sure that's a proud moment, right?
When
you start to see that happen. Absolutely. What's a book that everybody should read?
One that I think everyone should read that I liked recently, I'm a big biography reader, Ron Chernow's Washington. That's his, obviously, George Washington biography. It's a great story. It is when you get into his personal life and his personality and the, you know, looking at his letters and how he acted, it's really an amazing story about networking, how you present yourself, and how you handle crisis management, which I think are not the three things we think about. We think about George Washington. We think about him just being a great general, but and president. But there's a lot to learn from that book. I think biographies in general are a great self-improvement tool, and that one in particular is super impressive.
Very cool. Appreciate the recommendation. And last but not least, Ray, what is your number one key to success?
For me, it is about systems and processes. I love what we do. And when we first started, I did everything. So I really love the rush of finding a deal, developing a rapport with a seller, getting a fantastic entry price per unit, all that stuff. But you have to sit back a little bit and think, okay, this is great. I love doing this. And how can I figure out a way that I never have to do it again so that I can focus my mind on the most productive things? What is the new market that we want to go into? What is the new asset class that we want to go into? Do we want to go up to 40 units? Do we want to stay below 100, whatever it is, and why? And build your business out around everything beneath that so that you can focus your time on the most important stuff. And the key there is processes and systems. So that's the number one thing that I think allows us to do what we do.
That's great advice. You know, focus on your highest to best use by delegating and automating the rest of the stuff, right?
100%.
I love that. Well, Ray, thanks for coming on. If folks want to learn more about your interesting strategy and what you guys are doing, how can they reach you and how can they learn more about Terra Capital?
Yeah. So please feel free to visit us at usaterra.com. We've got a lot of interesting content on there where you can learn more. You can email us at info@usaterra.com. Follow us on LinkedIn. We've got a Bigger Pockets presence. We've got a Twitter presence. We do webinars from time to time, and you can register for those on our website where we talk about small multifam and how that industry is going. And if you're interested in learning more about some of our offerings, we have an investors link there, and you can take a look at some of the stuff we're working on. We've got a couple syndications going right now. We're raising for another small multifam value add fund right now as well. And there's a lot more info on those on our website there.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure all that's linked below, Ray, so folks can get a hold of you. And thanks for coming on the show and providing a ton of value. And I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Perfect. Thanks, Kent. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of Ritter on Real Estate. Hit the subscribe button to make sure you don't miss out on the content that will make you a better investor. Also, visit kentritter.com for articles, videos, and tools curated just for passive investors. Until next time, this is Kent Ritter with Ritter on Real Estate. Now go out and invest like a pro.